Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Halleck over here.
Hey, what's up?
And Mark Clifton over here, and Jeff DeClure on the board.
That's right.
Because Kyle's not with us today, but you're here, Mr. and Mrs. Listener.
That's right.
And that's all that matters.
That's all that really matters.
Only we want you to subscribe.
Hey.
Because my salary is directly connected to how many subscribers we have.
And this massive thing.
My wife needs a new haircut, so please subscribe. Okay, anyway, don't tell her I said she doesn't need a haircut, by the way. She looks great.
She does look great.
She looks great. She looks great. Everybody thinks she's
my daughter. You married way up.
I told you.
So did I.
I was at the grocery store the other day, standing, you know, we were there together, and the little teenage kid there running the cash register takes the bar and puts it between my stuff and her stuff. And I said, And are you with her? I said, yes, I've been with her for like 40 years. So, yes, he didn't think we were together because we didn't look like we. And then, literally, just a few weeks ago, we're at this restaurant, and this guy comes over, and I'm in a meal with my wife, right? And it's, are these separate checks? I go, no, she's actually with me. I know that's really hard to believe, but she's actually with me.
Oh, man.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Okay, so anyway, we're going to talk today. How y'all doing? So anyway, we're going to talk today about Tom Rainer.
Church Answers.
And, you know, Tom has some great resources in terms of just some wonderful statistics that are very helpful for us in this work. And everybody's going to be interested in these things we're looking at today. Some amazing data. The top 10 most common developments for churches in 2023-2024.
Okay.
All right?
Wow.
These are good.
Okay, so we got 10 of them.
Listen up.
So let's bust through. Here's number one. Ready?
Number one.
Okay. Local congregations will emphasize evangelism more than at any point in the past three decades.
I think they have to do that because they realize we've waited too long.
Right.
We just can't ignore it anymore.
There's an urgency
that
we haven't felt.
There's an urgency to it.
Yeah.
In other words, it's just like, you know, for a long time, we kind of felt like, well, if we just keep doing what we're doing, it'll come back around. We've got other things. But I think what Rainer has discovered is that a lot of churches are realizing, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We don't baptize anybody.
Yes.
And if we do, it's just a handful of people every couple of years. And I think it's just really begun to hit them that looking at the future, man, we're in deep, deep trouble.
One of the things he says, it's so good, Rainer says, church leaders understand that they can't lead a church to growth with cultural Christians.
Yeah, I know.
And transfer growth.
I know. What I say when I go out and do my little dog and pony show across the country, my canine and equestrian presentation, as I call it, is that there's very little low-hanging evangelical fruit out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is any low-hanging evangelical fruit, it's not going to go to my church, right? It's going to go to the big church in town.
Yep.
People who move into your community that are Christians looking for a church, they're not going to visit every church in the community. They're going to visit a few, and they're certainly going to visit the larger ones most of the time. Yeah. And the larger ones are going to have what they're looking for. And so they're not going to come to my church, which, you know, seats 710, has 38 people there on Sunday morning, and no teenagers and no children.
Yeah.
So we're not getting those people.
That's right, exactly.
And so what Rainer is saying is, it's forced us to realize if we're going to have a future at all, we got to grow evangelistically.
That's right.
We don't have the option anymore.
Yeah. And we have to get out in the community.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing.
And frankly, we see 800 churches a year close their doors. We're going to keep seeing 800 churches a year close their doors if those churches don't reach lost people.
Amen. That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's well said. Number two is this. This is really interesting, I think. The increase in the growth of diversity in congregations will be at its greatest ever in 2023. Now, he says this. He says, millennials see a monocultural generation as out of touch. Gen Z cannot imagine anything monocultural. In other words, one cultural, especially a church.
Oh, isn't that true?
Yeah.
I mean, that is so profound.
The world has shifted.
For millennials, If it's anything that's not a monocultural generation that I've touched, but for those younger kids, they can't even begin to understand walking to a church and not seeing all cultures represented.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that more and more. And I'm serving now at a church in Raytown, Missouri, a replant. We have an African-American pastor. Me, I'm also a pastor, and I'm not African-American. I did.
And the community, right. And the community is very mixed. It's a diverse community.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I did 23andMe, and I'm fish belly white.
Okay? That's right.
So you can't get any whiter than me.
Yeah.
And then our worship music leader is Hispanic.
Wow.
So we have the three of us there, and then represented in the congregation. We have some very, very young people and some very, very old people, and people from various backgrounds. And you just, you know what? It doesn't feel unnatural anymore.
It
reflects the community.
Right.
And I think we're going to get to a place, hopefully we have to get to a place where we see that more and more. Now, I grew up, I was raised in the church growth movement, Donald McGavern, all of that stuff, Peter Wagner, Charles Chaney was a huge influence on me. And we talked about the homogeneous principle of church planting. And the homogeneous principle of church planting was people gather in homogeneous groups, which they do.
Yeah.
And the homogeneous church principle of church planting was, you plant churches in every identifiable group.
Mm-hmm.
A missionary named Jim Slack called it the waffle concept.
Hmm.
He said, your city's not a pancake, it's a waffle. You take syrup and you pour it all over the pancake, but you've got to take syrup and intentionally put it in each pocket of the waffle. There's some truth to that, obviously. We've got to penetrate each people group.
Right.
But then we took the homogeneous principle of church planting and we brought it into the church.
Mm.
And we said, basically, the church is homogeneous.
Mm.
And the church is not homogeneous. The church needs to reflect all generations, all backgrounds, all ethnicities. And so while your evangelism strategy could be homogeneous, in other words, you're penetrating an identifiable culture, you want your church to represent all those cultures.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm glad you thought it was interesting because it took me about 5 minutes to say all that.
I followed you.
It'd be terrible if you did. I think when you say interesting, what he's really saying is, I didn't think he'd ever shut up. I think that's what he was saying. Okay. Number three.
Number three. The year 2024 will be a record year for church adoptions.
Yes. Let's hear it.
Hey, this is it, man. This is our lane.
That's great news.
It is.
It is great news.
Now, what does that mean?
It means that 12 years ago, when I started thinking about legacy church planting and realizing we cannot let these churches die, and I met you 10 years ago in front of the Southern Baptist Convention in Baltimore, Maryland, and we hugged each other.
That's right.
We said, man, God's brought us together.
Let's do this.
And we've got to change the narrative in Southern Baptist life that says dying churches are something to run toward, not run away from.
Amen.
And we've got to help dying churches realize that to release control and be adopted by another church is not a failure.
Mm.
It's not shameful. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's purposeful.
Yes.
And when Rainer says this year will be the highest number of adoptions, what we can celebrate is this message is finally taking traction.
Yes.
And churches are finally realizing adoption of another by another church is a viable, healthy option for us.
And we're seeing it all across the convention.
We are.
It's super encouraging.
And whether it's Alaska to Florida, to Maine,
all over the place.
To Hawaii, all over the place.
Yeah.
And all kinds of churches.
Very exciting. Okay, number four is more churches will have specific global partners. That's interesting.
That has happened.
Yeah.
People, even strong Southern Baptist churches with strong ties to the cooperative program, many of those are going to have specific ties to an orphanage, a school, a missionary in some other country.
Mm-hmm. Even churches that are they're planting?
Churches they're planting. And that's simply because the world is so much smaller today.
Yeah.
It's so easy to communicate with people around the world 24 hours a day through the internet and to stay connected, even to fly to other parts of the world. And it's encouraging to see churches continue to support the cooperative program in really strong ways, but also be very much involved.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, here's what he says. Rainer says, churches in America will seek to partner with churches in other nations, particularly where the gospel is spreading the most rapidly. And then he says, this trend is more than an increase in mission giving.
Right.
That's important, of course.
Right.
But he says it's more than that. It's an intentional and strategic partnership with a specific church or churches. And I know even our church here at Calvary Inglewood, we, again, Jeff DeClue's with us today, but he's leading us in starting partnerships in Wales and different parts in Africa, different parts where, again, like you said, the world has gotten so much smaller.
And people come to our cities from
That's
other parts
right.
of the world, and they have friends and relatives in other parts of the world.
Yep.
Look, I realize there's a lot to be discouraged about in this world. There always is, this side of heaven, and even a lot to be discouraged about at times in church life. But let's look at some encouragement things here. Rainer has shown us in 2023, 2024, there's going to be an increase in evangelism emphasis. Doesn't mean there's an increase in evangelism. Mm. That's another program for another day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's God's work.
Yes.
But there is an increase in evangelism emphasis and activity. There's an increase in multi-ethnic congregations. There's an increase in world missions hands-on emphasis, that the world is, our church's world is bigger than our parking lot. You know,
that's right.
It's bigger than our nation.
Yep.
Those are all really good things.
Very positive.
And an increased willingness for churches to be adopted by other churches.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, number five, the time between pastors for churches will be longer than ever.
Yeah. Interims, and I've seen that too. It used to be a 12-month interim was a long interim, because I've done interim pastorates and you know, and you
what
think,
is the, what would you say is the average interim?
Well,
like right now, I mean, obviously he's saying that it's, so he says this, I can remember when a long-term interim period was 12 months.
Yeah.
Many churches have these interim periods for 2 to 3 years.
Right. Yeah. I would agree with him. 12 months seemed like a long time. You figured you, before the end of the year, before a year is out, you're going to find another pastor. But now it's as though, no, it goes at least a year and then maybe two.
What do you think that's a healthy trend?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on who the transitional interim
is. Yeah,
I think if you have a really strong transitional interim who understands his role is to come in there and really pastor that place in sort of a transitional phase, it can be very, very helpful.
Yeah.
If you just have pulpit supply or weak interims who just show up and preach and leave, I don't think it is healthy.
It could really hurt a church.
It can really hurt a church. Yeah. But I think the idea that they take a long, and I also wonder, I don't know, the whole issue of how taking that long to find a pastor, you would think with the ease with which guys can submit their resume, a church, I deal with this all the time, guys and ladies. A church of 30 people needs a pastor. They put it in the state paper, or they put it on the website for the association or a convention, and they get 100 resumes emailed to them. 100. I mean, how's this little church going to go through 100 resumes?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of overwhelming. So I really think the way churches locate pastors, can I just share with you how it used to be done?
Yeah.
And you can say no.
No, please.
It'd
tell
be fun
us.
If you'd someday you are Halleck, you are Hurst or Kyle just need to say no, Clifton, don't share with us out. We don't want to care. Anyway, it used to be done is you just, if a church needed a pastor, they would just sit around. They would select a pastor search committee, and they called it a pulpit committee actually, and they would just look around within maybe 100 miles of their church, and say, where is God working in some pastor's life? Why have we seen a church do what we need our church to do? Hmm. And then they would just go listen to that guy preach on a Sunday morning. Hmm. And then they would come back to their church and pray about it and say, I think we should talk to him. And then they would call him up and talk to him. And there was no resume.
Yeah.
There was he'd come on. It was like that.
Interesting.
But now we've got this sort of quasi thing where we're going to receive resumes for 7 months.
Yeah. You know,
like you're hiring somebody for Amazon or something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, why do we qualify our resumes? Well, we want to have them this much education. It's like, I really kind of like the old way where men and women just prayed and said, I think this man over here, I think I see God working his life. And that man may say, hey, thanks for the offer. My dad, he got pulpit committees all the time. And he'd say, no, I'm staying here. But one time, I remember, because we get pulpit committees a lot. But one time I remember my dad came home from church and he said, you know, there's a church in Independence, Missouri that is really hurting, and they need a pastor. And the church where he was doing great. I mean, Calvary, Chillicothe, everybody loved him. It was doing great. But he said, man, I just feel called to go to that place.
Wow.
And he went, stayed there 20 years and did a great job. Never had a resume in his life. I think the way we look at, the way we'll do pastors has to be looked at.
Well, I'll tell you what's so hard too. Last thing I'll say is I know of a church just recently. I talked with a guy who's been through, they've been through 3 candidates all the way through the process.
Oh, yeah.
Just for them to be declined at the end.
And that's so discouraging.
So discouraging. So discouraging.
So
okay.
I agree. Longer interims are a reality.
Okay. The number 6 is the number of interim pastors will be greater than ever.
Yeah, there's a trend to that.
Yeah.
If your interims are not 6 months, now they're 18 months or 3 years, you're going to need more interim pastors.
Yep.
And I would just say to churches out there who are about to become pastorless or are pastorless, please contact your area missionary or your state convention and say, help us find a qualified, trained transitional pastor.
Yes.
I mean,
Good call.
There are some men who have a great ministry like that, and you need to know who they are.
That's right. Okay, number seven. This is interesting. More churches will request consultations than at any point in American church history.
And he's speaking at that from a church consultant role.
Okay, right.
And I would agree. I'm not a church consultant in the sense that I work for the North American Mission Board, but if I wanted to be, I could be full-time.
Yeah.
I could be full-time tomorrow.
Why do you think that is? I mean, historically, I'm guessing the association would have played. I mean, I don't know. That's really interesting.
I think it's simply churches overwhelmed with the rapid cultural change around them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
The culture has changed so quickly, and the community has changed so drastically that they don't even know how to deal with it.
Mm.
And they just have to have help. The faster and more rapid things change, the harder it is for churches to find ways to adjust to that. And I just think it's just an indicative of our cultural changes. Man, things have changed so much in 20 years.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In 10 years, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
In terms of worldview, biblical view,
mm-hmm.
demographics, immigration, housing,
everything.
Jobs, marital status, everything's changed. And so churches are just really... trying to grapple with all of that.
Yep.
So I think church consultations are just going to increase.
Yeah. Number eight is church autopsies will be the fastest growing area of research in American churches.
Yeah. And he says American churches. There are 4,000 churches that close their doors every year in North America. 4,000.
Man.
And he's talking about guys who do research into church life. Yeah, I agree with him. With so many churches closing, there's going to be a lot of research done on why these churches
closed. Why they're closing, yeah.
They got great buildings and great locations, and they've got a denomination behind them. Why are they closing? And so I agree. I think we're going to see more and more information about
that. It's interesting.
That.
So Rainer wrote this book, and you and I remember this, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. He wrote that in 2014.
Right.
And he said he's seen kind of a fresh movement of demand for the book growing again since 2022.
Yeah, since COVID was over, it's got a whole second life.
Yeah.
A whole other generation of people 10 years later have found it and have said, this is our problem, our church. And if you don't have that book, it needs to be in your library.
Yeah, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. It's very good. We've got two more here. Number nine, more pastors and staff will become bivocational and co-vocational.
It's going to have to be. Partially because the size of our congregations continues to shrink.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, you can argue with that. You can say it shouldn't. I don't, but it is. You can't deny the fact.
It's just true. It's across just true. The board.
Turn to this, you know, year 2000, median church in North America was 167 in worship. Today, it's less than 70. And Rainer, I talked to him this week, and he thinks by the time they get their study done, it'll probably be less than 50.
Wow.
That means half the churches in North America will be under 50, half will be above. That half under 50, most of those are obviously bivocational. Yep. Just the cost of living.
Yep.
Have you driven through McDonald's lately?
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean, you drive through McDonald's.
You spend $20 for yourself.
What in the world?
I know.
And so, you know, so many churches are going to have guys who are bivocational and co-vocational.
The other thing is, I think we just continue to see younger generations haven't been discipled well in giving, in sacrificial giving, and they're spending beyond their means. And so a lot of these the builder generation, even into the boomer generation, that learned tithing and sacrificial giving, that has not been passed on to these younger generations.
That is such a keen insight. One of the reasons I think you're going to see more bivocational pastors is because the builder and the boomer generations have died.
Yeah.
And they not only tithe, they gave above their tithe.
Right.
And this younger generation is so in debt and so maxed out that they don't.
That they just don't.
They just don't.
Yep.
And I think, man, that is a good point, Halleck.
Yeah.
That's great.
Number 10, last one is this. More pastors and staff will get their theological and ministry training in the church. And he says, this trend has been growing the past decade and will continue to grow even more in 2023. So he's talking about theological education. And here's what we know. It is changing. I mean, the days where you would pack up and move and go to Southern and live for 3 years and get your MDiv, and those days are quickly behind us. I mean, some can still do that.
Right.
But there's a real shift in theological education, I think, across the board. I've heard Al Mohler talk about this some.
Well, and we need to do an entire podcast, and we won't be able to unless you guys subscribe, because they'll take us off the air. But if you'll subscribe right now, we need to do an entire podcast on theological education, because when I was in my theological education in the 1980s, the majority of us on the seminary campus were MDiv students. And, of course, we didn't do online studies. We were all there physically, right? Or maybe, like, if you were at New Orleans and you lived in Atlanta, every week they'd have an Atlanta campus in Atlanta for New Orleans or something like that. But today, the vast majority of students enrolled in our seminaries, our six seminaries, are not MDiv students.
They're not MDivs,
And the vast majority are online students. And I don't have these numbers in front of me, so don't hold me to this. But in talking to Dr. Jamie Dew at
New Orleans,
he was on our podcast recently. I want to say it's somewhere around 30% of online students ever graduate.
Is that right?
Only 30% graduate. 70%
don't. So they take some classes, but they never graduate.
You take a few classes, then you get busy, and you quit taking classes, and you just never get around to finishing.
Interesting.
And yet, what we see is, like at Midwestern and other seminaries, a deep desire to connect theological education to the local church.
Yes.
They have these different tracks they'll do where they put you in a local church and you get credit for that. And then you see other groups like you that actually do internships here where guys can come in residency with you.
Yep.
And so I think Rainer's right. More and more, even though we'll still have theological institutions, and we need to as seminaries, they're going to have to be more and more adaptable to local church participation, I think. In other ways,
deeper partnership between local church.
But that, you know, if you want to go back and listen, it's on. You can find it on our go to revitalizeandreplant.com. All of the podcasts are listed there, and the one we did with Jamie Dew, I think we did two of them where he talks about that. It's really good.
That's great.
Go back and listen to it again.
Well, those are 10 trends that we're seeing that, according to Tom Rainer, the most common developments. That we're seeing as we head into...
Most of them are good.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of them are good.
What's interesting is we don't know yet.
We're
going to see. We're going to see what happens as a result. But I think it's good for us to be aware of knowing the times.
Absolutely. All right. And nothing else. You and I are always ahead of the trend. Well, your hair looks really good, by the way.
Thanks. I did it just for you.
Did you?
Yeah.
Your hair's turned white, hasn't it?
It's getting more
and
more
gray. It looks nice. It looks good.
It's kind of got a smooth thing. I don't really know.
It looks good.
I think I'm more gray than you.
You are more gray than me. Well, not my beard. I got a gray beard, but the rest of my hair is not gray. Are y'all enjoying this right now? Is this why you tune in to hear about this?
It's like we're sitting
at least
good
we
friends.
Have hair, right?
Well, that's true.
Kyle doesn't.
No.
Have I mentioned that before?
Didn't you talk about hair plugs?
I think I did. Kyle. He's a carrier getting. No, I shouldn't say that. Kyle, we love Kyle. He's in Lubbock, Texas, and he's the main man for this podcast. Yeah, we wouldn't do a podcast if it wasn't for
Kyle.
That's
right. He holds it all together.
That's right. Hey, check us out at churchreplanters.com, and please subscribe on your favorite platform.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.